All right, I'm Stephanie.
I'm Natalia.
And this is Till Death Do Us Part.
Okay, so everybody, what a special treat we have today. We're here. Natalia, you're here.
We now know that Stephanie's a real human.
I'm not catfishing you.
You're not, no. And you're not a simulation. You're a real person.
I'm a hologram. But it has been so fun. Josh and I came to New Jersey for like some family parties, but we came early because, of course, we had to see Natalia.
It's really what you came for. You mm-hmm. said it was for family things, but no. I know you made the entire mm-hmm. trip for me.
Exactly.
You just didn't want to say it because my ego's already so huge.
There is no family.
That's the catfish. No, you made it up. You just don't want to tell me.
Yes, I paid all these actors.
Oh my God, can you imagine?
I'm sure it has happened, actually. But it has been, I think it's been great. I'm glad it didn't freaking rain today.
I know, it held off, and it was actually nice, warm.
Nice, warm. We went to breakfast at a fancy, well, not fancy, but it was good. They had shakshuka.
It was delicious.
It was so good, nice. But it was like a family-sized portion.
Huge portions. We could have shared
one day.
I ordered a coffee, what I thought was going to be a mug of coffee. They brought me an entire French press to the table.
I mean,
it was humongous.
It was
unnecessary.
But Josh enjoyed his French toast, and I don't know, we just had a good old time brunching.
It's been good.
We were ladies who lunched.
Yes. that is who we are.
But I think it's been going swimmingly, and do you want to share your doggo story or save it?
You know what? We're going to talk about it.
Okay.
So I'm staying in a hotel, and it's a very generic hotel, guys. It's not like some fancy old building, right? Like a chain hotel. And when I came into the room and I start to unpack my bag, my suitcase is on the floor. And when I bend down to scoop my clothes out, right on the floor, I hear very clearly and very much in front of me, meaning I can tell it's not on the floor, you know, a different floor underneath me. I'm on the higher floors.
You can tell it's in the room.
Yeah, I can tell it's right there with me, not in a different room or a different floor. I hear something scratching the carpet very, very clearly, as if an animal is pawing at the floor. It sounded so real that I went to look under the bed. I thought somebody was hiding under the bed. But guys, the bed is a solid base. There's nowhere for somebody to hide. And I did check all the spaces in the room.
And the noise, you said, kind of like traveled. So like if it was localized to the closet or the bed, how did the noise travel?
Right. Like, so it at first was just in front of my face. I stayed crouched because I was frozen. It was freaking me out because I didn't understand what was happening. And then it started to sort of move in a circle in front of me as if an animal, I mean, very much to me, I immediately felt instinctually it was a dog. I've had dogs. It felt like a dog was circling in front of me looking for a spot to pee.
Yeah.
Like if he was scratching and telling an owner, hey, I need to go to the bathroom. And it moved around for a few minutes and then it just stopped. Mm. I haven't heard it since.
Thank God.
Yes. And, you know, we spoke to the manager of the hotel. He said that there are people because of where this hotel is located. Some people stay here for months. Maybe at some point someone had a dog here. It still seems very unlikely to me that a dog would have passed away in this hotel. It seems weird. However,
and why would a dog stay?
Why would you stay here, man? I thought all dogs go to heaven. Leave. Go get those bones and bitches. Don't stay here. Don't stay
here. You should be chasing cats somewhere. Jeez.
Come on. But it just sounded so specifically that way. It seemed that way in my mind. I told Stephanie the only other thing I can imagine it was a torso, half a torso dragging itself. A ghost dragging itself across the floor of my room.
Please help me. And you were like, get the fuck out. Like,
yeah.
No, help me.
No, I tell those spirits, I'm not here to find out. I am not here for your communication. Please leave. Mm-mm. And that's the weird ghost that was in my room. It was very bizarre.
Well, I am glad that it
stopped
for sure. But I mean,
that's never happened to me in a non-residential space. I've only ever felt any kind of energies in a residential home. That was very weird.
But I can see why it would happen in a hotel, because think of all the vibes and energies that pass through over time.
Like, I mean, I shouldn't say non-residential. I have felt it in hospitals, old courthouses, I don't want to say what chain we're in, but
they're not a sponsor.
They're not paying me to sponsor them. But if I was in, you know, a chain of Super 8s,
sure,
you know, I don't expect ghosts to hang out there. It's just not nice enough. If I was going to be everlastingly
imagine?
It just seems sad.
Your soul is like stuck at like
the Ramada?
The Ramada.
I can't.
A Red Roof Inn.
No doggo. Move on, my friend.
Find a nice preserve.
Find the eternal fire hydrant that is out there for you. But it was very shocking. No like.
No, it was no bueno for sure. What else? So we have a couple quarters we have to get to, right?
Yes.
There isn't really anything for like housekeeping corner, but should we talk about either like, what do we call the positive corner? Do we have a positive, good vibe corner at all?
We did at some point have a blessed corner or a gratuity corner. We haven't been there for a long time.
No, because we'd rather talk about the fuck you corner, right?
Every day, all day.
All right. The fuck you corner. Do you have a fuck you?
Yes.
Okay.
Please. We're putting Home Depot in the fuck you corner.
It's on our shit list.
Squarely there because of their asinine return policy. Okay. Now look, I'm very good about returning things. We've talked about returning things very recently on the show. And I understand I don't have the receipt if an item's fucked up. Like, I understand the parameters, but I recently tried to return things to Home Depot that were wrapped, intact, beautiful, and I just wanted store credit.
And you had the receipt.
And
it's not like
they literally said, sorry, it's been more than 90 days. We're not giving you anything for this. Sorry, not sorry. And I'm just going to say, fuck you. Go to the corner.
Get in the corner, Home Depot.
That is just you sucking up my money. I was willing to just go ahead and spend it on you. But you know what? Now I'm just not going to want to shop at Lowe's again. That's how badly I feel burned by you.
Even if it was something where, like, we will only give you a gift card, fine, great. I will buy light bulbs.
That's something. What I said. I said I'm here all the time. I'm always in Home Depot for something. Mm-hmm. I will go and purchase anything. I get cleaners there.
Sure.
I go to the garden center all the time. I'll spend it here.
Right. You can get flowers. Who cares?
I don't know anything. The light bulbs. I'll get them here. But they were unwilling to work on it with me. So
it's so frustrating for that too, because if you do have something beyond 90 days, everyone and their mother is doing construction or remodeling or whatever, and stuff is delayed. So but you can't even get a couch right now. Like,
yeah, it takes a long time. So
if the supply chain crisis is really that bad, then you have to fix your customer service, Home Depot. Why do we have to solve all the problems? I think last night we solved a lot of them.
We did.
Don't remember.
Don't know. After that entire bottle or multiple bottles, then those solutions have just, we spoke them into existence though. We were trying to manifest them. We thought of them.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's the universe's job to put them into work.
We make, like I said, we make broad brushstrokes, and it's someone else to figure out the details and just make it work, people.
We can't do it all. We can't do everything.
We're just two people trying to do a podcast.
If we're thinking of the genius idea, why do we have to implement it too? Why do we have to do all the work?
Should we call the president on our next episode and ask him what he's doing?
Will he understand what we're saying, though, Bendito? Oh, poor thing.
We can talk to his wife. She's a doctor.
Is she all there? I don't know.
I don't know.
Who's under him? Who's running the campaign right now? Who's got this? Who's got this, guys?
Good Lord. Next on the shit list.
Ooh, who's on there?
Okay, so we talked about this a little bit at breakfast, but in the pandemic, we started small with home projects. And this, the Home Depot one kind of leads into this one a little bit. I was like, all right, we need to get rid of all the boxes and do bins and organize the garage and put, you know, decorations like Christmas in a bin, like a human being, just trying to be an adult here. But of course that evolves. Well, we need to build a shelf. Well, okay. We need to do X, Y, and Z. And it evolves. Josh, and I will throw his dad on here too, because he does this too. But Josh, in the bathroom, if a tile like popped off, he goes, oh, well, that's easy. I'll just pop a couple of these off and fix them. Well, more kept coming. And then it was overwhelming. All the tile is gone. So you're kind of just stepping around a project. And then, okay, so the tile's off. You're going to redo the tile. But if you redo the tile, you got to repaint. You got to regrout. You have to do, you know, every... So it just... And then, well, if you're going to paint the wall, you got to paint the ceiling. So I'm putting home projects on the shit list because I am done. I'm done. Josh is leaving in a little bit for 6 months, and he either needs to get them all done before we leave, or he leaves, I should say, or we just not start anything new because yeah. I can't have any more half done anything. It's too much. It's too much.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You can't have things in perpetual upheaval. Mm. It's like you never get to stop.
Yes.
Feeling like it's an anxiety. Because it's like, okay, when is it going to be over? When can I settle in?
Mm-hmm.
I want the projects done already.
I just want to breathe. Can I just have like a relaxing time and not think about it until 11:30 at night.
There's a children's book called If You Give a Mouse a Cookie. Okay. This is what I feel like these home projects end up being. You know, you give a mouse a cookie, he's going to want a glass of milk. If you give him the glass of milk, he wants, I don't know, whatever the hell the mouse
wants.
He's
going to want to take a nap.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then he wants the next thing and the next thing. And this is how the home projects start. It's just you change one thing and it leads to the next and the next and the next. And then it's like you go from one room to the next project and the next. And it just never ends. And literally you can let it, if you want to, go on in perpetuity. Your whole house forever and ever till you die.
Does your family do this? So when we came back from South Dakota, we had to move the kayaks because they've been like getting snowed on, ice and stuff. And they were covered, but covers don't last. So we were like, okay, we're just going to move it to the side of the house, blah, blah, blah. So Josh gets it, but then he wants to clean the kayaks. So he gets the hose and the broom, the pool brush or whatever. And everything is like, it's like he just picked it up and left. And I'm like, well, the hose is still here. The broom is still here. The like pile of trash that was like in the kayak, the pine needles. So are you going to finish that? Because you finished moving the kayak, but now the project you started here, it's just a never ending thing.
Yeah,
it's like I can tell everywhere you've been because of your trail. You left a trail.
You've left your evidence. You would be very bad at getting away with crime, Josh. Okay. You've left your prints all
everywhere.
I can tell by the unfinished projects here where you've been. Yeah, no, it's got to be wrapped up. Yeah, I have this also. It's like I walk around my property and it's like, oh, I've got this that got halfway started.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got here the tiles that are one day going to be the back patio. And back here, the pool that needs to be re-put up. And the over here, the foundation that will one day be the shed. I got it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I got it. It's everyone. It's all these projects that built up over. I think it's what it was is like the leftovers of all these pandemic good intentions. So I think we can just put good intentions in the fuck you corner too. Just fuck that.
Trust and believe. Just do a puzzle. Just do a puzzle. It just
or don't. Or just don't. Okay.
Well, at least a puzzle you don't feel bad about ignoring. But like you have to like put grout on the tub.
Right. You can't keep leaving it. All right. If you started it, it's gotta get finished now. It's time. You gotta wrap it up. Wrap it up. You started it. It needs the grout now.
It's just okay. Whatever. Fuck you, good intentions.
Yeah, you're good intentions and home improvements are done.
Done.
They're done. They're not for us anymore.
just over it. What's next on the list?
Oh, so I have something that I had never thought about before. And this might completely expose me as the weirdo. Or maybe everyone's like me. And I think everyone is mostly like me. I'm not sure. This is going to be very illuminating.
Okay.
You know the squeeze bottles of whatever, condiments like mayo, ketchup, mm-hmm. jelly, whatever. You have like they have the safety tabs, right? Okay. You have to open them before you can squeeze them out.
Mm-hmm.
Do you or do you not first wash the top that you squeeze the condiment sauce out of? And before you answer, I'm going to go ahead and admit up front that I never have. I have always just peeled the top off, stuck the top on, and squeezed that shit out. And I never, people might be screaming like, ew, that's gross. You never thought. Ron watched me do it the other day, and I don't know why. For all the years we've had squeeze bottles, he never watched me do this before. But I was making sandwiches. He saw me do it, and he's like, well, what? Why didn't you wash it first? And I was like, what?
What?
Huh? And I'm like, I wanted to say something like, the vodka will kill it. But then I realized there's no alcohol in mayo or any other kind of acidic anything that's going to kill germs. So I just stood there holding the squeeze bottle. And I was like, I've never done.
So now that you say that, I'm like, do I admit this? Okay. So a lot of like makeup things, when you take the top off, they have that silver thing on top.
Yeah.
Even like sometimes you get like juice and it has the tab over the opening of the bottle, right?
Yeah.
I will open it with my mouth.
Okay. Yeah. I've done that.
And
if it's hard to open and I can't peel it off of my finger,
I will use, like, I yep. did it with my, like, face cream, those little silver foil yep. things. I will rip it off with my teeth.
I feel like
dentists don't approve, but now that people wash those, I'm like, well, I put it in my mouth, and I consider myself to be a clean person.
I wash my hands so my Apple Watch tells me I'm done. So, I mean, I feel like I'm cleaner than most people. All the time, I'm in the bathroom, and I hear people leave without washing their hands. And I think to myself, who are you?
I don't know.
What's wrong with you?
Who hurt you?
Right?
Who hurt you?
I see people sneeze, and they don't cover their mouths.
Well, when people do wash their hands and they use the air dryers in the bathrooms, I'm like, you have to wash your hands again.
I mean, look, sometimes you don't have a choice. I always prefer the paper towels myself.
I prefer paper towels.
Sometimes there's nothing. But, okay, so this is what I thought, because I felt attacked.
I feel, like, exposed or something. I don't know.
I immediately was like, wait, maybe I'm the weird one. But it was like a stare down. I felt like a Western, but like, will you be you?
Like a Mexican standoff?
I was like, hold up, wait, which one of us is the weird one here? Are you like paranoid and you are over the top and wash? I'm like, so do you wash the tops on everything you open? Like,
have you ever seen him do that before?
No, but then like, I started thinking about how many of us watch our spouses open a mm-hmm. squeeze bottle of anything and pay that much attention.
I'm going to, like, save this little nugget and ask people now and see how uncomfortable people feel when they're like, am I doing it wrong?
Yes.
Like,
there's only one other time in my life where I felt like this was a real diversive thing where people in the room got really heated. And it was where once years ago, somebody brought up, do you wash your roasted chicken.
Oh, yeah.
Before you throw it in. And people in the room were like, well, why are you going to wash it? It's going in the oven. And what do you mean? I just pat it dry. And you're people got crazy in that room. So this was one of those moments. And I really was just second guessing myself. And I've been holding on to this so we could talk about it. Because I was like, you know what? I really don't think that I'm the weird one here. I really think that most Americans today would say that they don't wash it.
Covers it.
Well, he's like, well, it came out of a factory and now you're squeezing the condiment through it. And what if there's germs on it? And I'm like, I guess I'm just building my immune system. I said, you know what? Now that I think about it, probably many times in my life, I've caught some kind of cold or something from it and never even knew, or like a stomach virus. And I never thought about it. And it was probably from one of these fucking jellies. But maybe. Who cares? It is what it is. If I have to stop and now add another chore to my goddamn list in this life, I can't handle it.
No, that's too overwhelming.
I can't. I can't start washing the tops of the squeeze bottles.
No, thank you.
I'm not going to do it. I'm going to tell you right now, I'm not going to do it.
What does bother me, do you... Okay, at home, if you, like, are out all day, go to the doctor, whatever, go to the movies, and then come home, do you lay in bed with the clothes that you were wearing?
No.
I don't either.
No.
I think that's so gross.
No, those are my outside clothes.
Yeah.
I don't want to. Okay, like, there has been times where I've gone and had, like, the most outrageous, terrible day, but if I laid on my bed, it would only be on, like, the foot of my bed, at the very end, on the top of the comforter, and it's because, like, I'm ready to have a meltdown and I just need to lay on something. And I can't even remember the last time I did that. If that happens, I really am going to lay on the couch, the leather couch.
Yeah.
I'm not going to put my outside clothes on my bed. I really don't. And I would never, never get in the sheets or put my head on the pillow.
That's nasty.
Nope.
No, I have had to train people in my family. Do not do that. I have been to too many places, like a restaurant, or there was one time I was literally at a, like, getting lab work done. So, you know how you just sit in the room with tons of other people. This, like, guy who, he probably couldn't help it, but he just hadn't showered, probably couldn't afford deodorant. Who knows what the case is? But he gets up, and as he's walking by, there's a huge hole in the back of his pants, and he was sitting on the chair in his underwear. And so now you want to sit on that and then sit on your bed?
Nope. Nope. You know what else I don't do that it weirds me out? And it's something people do all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I go to IKEA and I see people laying on the beds to try them out.
Oh, God.
And they're like rolling in them or they're laying out in them, like trying them out. And I'm like, do you realize how many other people have laid in that before you?
Or little kids with sticky fingers. And
I mean, look. There is just times as a parent, you're going to take your kids to places, they go in those ball pits and shit, and it's germ heaven.
They probably, well, kids probably need that to build their immunity, but
they're going
to
do it. You just know going in, they're filled with germs. Children are just germy. Constantly wipe them down before they touch you. Yep. However, I, as an adult, do not need to be laying on furniture. Mm-hmm. I don't like to ever, when I'm in the mall and they have places where you can try out beanbag chairs and shit.
Oh, I hate
that. I don't want to try out fabric-y items that other humans can touch and rub their skin cells on. I don't want your skin flakes. Have you ever done a close-up of your dermal layer?
It's nasty.
It flakes off. It's got...
Sand, and you have bugs like in
you
your
do,
hair.
All
like,
over you.
Yeah.
Right now, millions of them. No thanks.
We'll just have that left in everyone's thoughts. You want to talk about like a haunted or paranormal podcast? Just talk about the bugs that live on your skin.
That is truly horrifying. Truly horrifying. So, yeah, that's... No, thank you. So we'll find out. Maybe people will. We'll have to put up a thing, a little poll on Insta. Yeah. We'll put just a picture of like a Heinz bottle. Do you wash your tops? We'll make a t-shirt out of them.
Just the tip.
TM. It is trademarked, guys. Don't even. Promo code name.
It's so fantastic.
Oh my god. So yeah, I don't think people wash the towels.
They really don't.
So either. Are there any other things we need to cover before we get into this case?
No, I think we need to get into the case.
Okay.
It's a whopper.
It is a whopper. There's so many.
Just I feel the like way we like it.
This case, it can either be very straightforward or you can just like let it go on forever. So let's just see where it goes. Maybe it'll be a two-parter. Maybe it'll be like 3 hours long. Who knows? We're gonna
roll with it.
You're going to roll with it.
That's how it is when you listen to the live version, right? When you get the CD and they're like, this was the live version of the song. You just go with it.
Yeah.
It's not the huge. We're just going to go.
All right. So this is a case that is really interesting because it is about some journalists and working like at a news station. And there has been journalists who have died live on the air or like killed themselves live on the air. But this is one of the first times that another journalist targeted another journalist and was caught on film, TV, live, whatever you want to call it. So would you like to start?
Sure.
Okay.
So this is the murder of Allison Parker and Adam Ward. We're going to go to Moneta, Virginia on August 26th in 2015. News reporter Allison Parker and photojournalist Adam Ward were at Smith Mountain Lake, which is 26 miles southeast of Roanoke. It's Roanoke, right? Not Roanoke-y. Roanoke. They were interviewing Vicki Gardner, who is an executive director to the local Chamber of Commerce, and they were there for the 50th anniversary of the lake.
So this is one of the first live broadcast segments that Parker was doing because as it was one of her first live broadcast segments, Parker interviewed Gardner about the upcoming 50th anniversary festivities for the lake, local tourism, and the destination. There was some pressure to perform well because if it did do well, it would firmly set in stone a path to success and promotion at the station for Allison Parker. At 6:44 a.m., the bright and cheerful Parker starts off with her signature smile. She's greeting the station's viewers, and she launches into her question and answer session with Gardner. But halfway through the interview, I mean, everything was going by just perfectly. There was nothing going on. However, in the shadows of the background behind Adam Ward, a man dressed in all black came out slowly. Gardner and Parker, they may have noticed something, some movement in their peripheral, but staying professional to the live interview, everything continued and the distraction was ignored. It was as if the figure wasn't even noticed. The figure appears to make his own recording of the interview and holds up a cell phone to take video of the segment. The cameraman, Adam Ward, focused on doing his job, didn't notice anything other than the two women, and his back was actually to the figure. He had no idea what was going to happen next.
So at 6:46, a man walks up into the scene of the interview, now in full view, and brandishes a handgun.
So I did put in here, it was, for those interested, it was a 9mm Glock, and it looks like he is recording himself pointing the gun at Parker. And it's like there was a split second of confusion because it seemed like the man lowered the gun, like he's going to allow the interview to continue. And there's a chance that the figure holding the gun didn't even know the interview was being recorded live. But once it was realized, the interview was perhaps being broadcasted into everyone's home and thousands of watchers, it's like the figure got excited and he raises the pistol again and opens fire.
The man could be heard muttering, "bitch," while aiming at Allison Parker specifically. He shot her in the head and the chest.
So some sources reported 7. Some people said it was 15 shots. But regardless, shots were fired and screams are heard. The last thing thousands of viewers see before the live feed cuts and the cameraman falls to the ground is just a brief image of the killer. The entire event happened so suddenly that everything was seen by the public, the station, and TV audiences at home. So in this confusion, the station, they just switch back to the live feed of the anchor, Kimberly McGroom, back at the studio. Her eyes, and there is video of this on YouTube where it cuts to her and her jaw is dropping and she just says, okay, not sure what happened there, but we'll, of course, let you know as soon as we find out what those sounds were from. And to make sense of the events taking place, Kimberly says that maybe those popping noises are a car backfiring. But we all know that is not the case. And maybe she was just doing damage control. Maybe it was wishful thinking. Because Parker and Ward were laying dying at the scene. Paramedics rushed to assist Gardner, who was also wounded in the attack. Gardner was rushed to the local hospital in Roanoke, but even with surgeries and hospital stay, it was clear that she was not the intended target of the attack. Her wounds appeared to be accidental, which, how can you tell a gunshot is accidental? I'm not really sure. But...
So I think generally, if you have multiple gunshot victims and you see that very specifically certain victims have direct hits to the head and chest, which are how Allison and Adam were hit, and the other victim, it has what they would call like glancing shots or like shots that you could tell she was hit where like the bullets were not intended for her, but struck her after they hit another object. Like, he wasn't aiming for her.
Okay.
They could tell she wasn't hit in her vital organs, whereas he had the opportunity to kill all of them. He didn't go for her and give killing blows.
So like there were the immobilizing shots for Ward and Parker, but she was just like, she just happened to be there.
Yeah. I mean, he had enough time. I mean, we know he had enough time. He could have gone over and put another bullet in her. He didn't. Mm-hmm. He just was very specifically out to get Allison and Adam.
Oh, my God. Okay. Local law enforcement obviously rushed into action, and they used the footage captured by Ward's camera. The image of the shooter that flashed on the screen was taken by the police to the station to ask if they knew who it was or they could recognize anything. Horrified, the station manager says yes. The figure just looked like WDBJ TV station's own former employee, Vester Flanagan, professionally known as Bryce Williams.
At 8:23 a.m., a 22-page suicide note was received via fax at ABC News, in which Flanagan rambled in a long rage against everyone who has ever slighted him, from his coworkers who refused to work with him, to his high school coach, who he hadn't seen in 2 decades. In the note, he wrote how his anger had been, quote, building steadily, and described himself as, quote, a human powder keg, just waiting to go boom. Later in the note, Flanagan expressed admiration for the Columbine high school killers, and I'm going to say this wrong. Sway Hugh Cho, who shot and killed 32 people at Virginia Tech in 2007. Also, I was influenced by Sway Hugh Cho. That's my boy right there. He got nearly double the amount that Eric Harris and Dylan Keeble got. Just saying. Flanagan admits to everyone in the letter, yeah, I'm all fucked up in the head.
So... Listeners may not know how much effort it takes to just send one fax, but the fact that he did this for like 23 pages means that like he had time to plan this and he was sitting here like either feeding each page in or making sure 23 pages go, because you have to like make sure the dial goes through and that the fax actually gets sent. Who even has
confirmation?
Fax? Yeah. That's a lot of time. So he... It's not like he got pissed off and sent a quick email, or you when you get mad and send a nasty text. This was like, this took
He was making sure his message got across. I mean, the police really refer to this note as a manifesto. Mm. It's like that real Unabomber shit. Like, he wrote this whole long narrative and he was making sure they got it.
The references that he makes in this manifesto is especially chilling because it tells law enforcement, which they reported, is that Vester has plans to kill again. They were also faced with the impossible task of tracking him since he obviously was on the move now.
At 10 a.m., Flanagan called and made a direct confession to the police. They used that cell phone to track him during a five-hour manhunt. At 11:14 a.m., the shooter uploaded a 56-second video he took on his cell phone to his Twitter and Facebook accounts. So that was where we saw him at the scene when he's holding up his cell phone. He was recording that entire exchange because he knew he was going to upload it later. That was his entire intent, was to catch it on video. At 11:20 a.m., he ran his car off the road after a cop tried to pull him over and he shot himself in the head. Although they airlifted him to the nearest hospital, he was pronounced dead on arrival. So now we're going to go into who the victims were, right? So that in a nutshell is what happened that day in August 2015. Seems like a straightforward thing, right? This man went postal, literally.
Literally. Right?
It was the definition of a man exacting revenge in his workplace, except it was on live TV.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But it gets very nuanced in the aftermath. But yes, we'll go into first who it was, the victims, real quick. So if Allison Parker, 24, she had her birthday just 1 week before she was shot dead. And we're going to just say, because of the story and the context, people will understand once we get into it. She was a young white woman.
And also, both of the shooting, the victims, Ward and Parker, were romantically involved with other employees at the station, according to Parker's boyfriend, anchor Chris Hurst. So not only did your coworker pass away, but it was like your fiance, which is like another strike, another knife to the heart, I think. Mm-hmm. Parker, like you said, just turned 24, and she just completed special reports on like child abuse at the station where she worked as an intern. She attended James Madison University. She was the editor of her school's newspaper. According to her Facebook, she spent most of her life outside in Virginia. She was a kayaker. She attended community theater. She was just a young, like, vivacious. Her life was literally just getting started.
Yeah.
This was, like, her first big,
like, yes, her big
girl. Yeah, yeah, big girl job.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Hurst said that they really haven't publicly shared the relationship, but they were very much in love. He said that they had just even moved in together and wanted to get married. He says that he was numb about the entire situation.
And then we have Adam Ward, 27. Again, for context only, we're going to say he was also a young Caucasian man.
And he did graduate from Virginia Tech, and he was engaged to another producer at the station, Melissa Ott. So it's like one of those places where, like, they're a family. They literally are family.
Yeah, it seems like they had a very tight-knit group.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like very small town feel.
Yeah.
So it seems like everybody knew each other and was supporting each other. Everybody seemed very happy.
It was just nice. It was just nice.
They had a lot of pictures of themselves hanging out, all the coworkers, mm-hmm. like very supportive of each other. It seemed like a nice environment.
Right.
For whatever that means. I know what we see is not always what you get, but for mm-hmm. all intents and purposes, it seems like it was an environment that everyone enjoyed working at, other than our killer. We're going to talk about him next. Who was this guy? Vester Lee Flanagan II.
That means there's more than one of them, apparently.
Apparently, he was the second of them. 41 at the time that the crime was committed. There's a Libra. That should tell you a lot. Libra men suck. Not sorry. AKA, his professional name, like you said, he went by Bryce Williams. He came from Oakland, California. He earned a degree in broadcast journalism in 1995 from San Francisco State University. Apparently, when he was starting out his career, was very well liked, seemed to do well in school, seemed to come from a good family, got his jobs, you know, with perfect interviews. No one had anything bad to say when he was younger.
So when he graduated, it was March 1999 to March 2000. He worked in Florida as a recorder for WTWC-TV, and that's where he first started to exhibit some of the concerning behaviors. And this is when we get into, like, the allegations made by Vester. There was an instance when the coworkers pointed out an error, and I think, honestly, it was constructive criticism, which I'm not taking aside. I was just listening to many different stories are repeating the same issue. And it literally was just like, hey, you made an error. This is what you were supposed to do or say. And Vester then complained to the news director, Don Schaefer, that he was being victimized due to his orientation, which, okay, you made a mistake at work. You don't just go complain to the director of the station and say they don't like me because I'm gay. I don't.
It seems like, at least in the beginning, he was, look, you're in the entertainment business. I know you're a journalist, but let's be real. You're in front of TV cameras.
Yeah.
In that business, you're going to get criticism. He should know this. And it seems like he had, from the get-go, a hard time getting that kind of feedback.
Yeah.
In general. And it seemed like as time went on, he became harder and harder to deal with and received that criticism in a worse and worse way. He was a sore loser. And he was not taking it. Now, we're going to go into the allegations and some of the things that he says were being said. Now, were they being said? It seems like some things were being said. However, not that any of this is okay. However, it's not like his concerns were taken seriously. All right, we're going to go into it. So the allegations he made to his higher ups were either not substantiated. Right. It seems like he lied about some things. He stretched the truth. Like when he went complaining, it seems like he went with this attitude of, I don't like the criticism I'm getting. Let me also sprinkle it in with, oh, and they're making fun of me. So it seems like he blended in his grievances.
He made it personal.
Yes.
He made everything personal.
And it's like, you know what? If you're getting bullied, then go complain about that to HR and get that handled. But if you're having problems with criticism because you're legit on camera making mistakes and that's documented, they have the footage of him like messing up the lines, not doing on camera what he was told to do. If you can't handle the criticism, that's a separate issue and you shouldn't be going to your director about it. That's something you should be handling like on your base level, like that, fix your shit. But he seems like he took it, he melded it together and he got real upset about it. So his stories got very dramatic. So some of these allegations were either not substantiated or his directors did take his comments seriously, such as his superiors when he was in Tallahassee. So when he was there, Flanagan complained to his news director that his colleagues were teasing him for being gay. There, the director met with staff members and they told them to cut it out. The TV producer in Florida, Michael Walker, states that the co-workers, this is what Flanagan told him, were saying things like, zoom in on the gay guy. So this is not okay, right? We're going to say that flat out. We're not saying that's okay. It's not okay for that to happen. I'm not saying you should eat that shit. No.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like this was some bullying that was going on. But Flanagan definitely had some narcissism going on before this, and it's a combination that led to this tragedy. For example, after one newscast, a female meteorologist told her boss that Flanagan had made a mistake on air. He had referred to an opening argument in a trial, and it was supposed to be referred to as an opening statement. Flanagan overheard her telling her boss, and he began screaming at her on set in front of everyone. He said, "You're not my news director. You're not my general manager." And she said, "You know, you can't talk to me like that." And she tried to walk away.
Mm-hmm.
And he tried to tell her he wanted to take things outside. Quote. So he wants to throw hands with a woman. All right, this big, tall man.
He just immediately goes to 0 to 100.
Like, you want to go and start a physical fight outside because of a legit mistake that you made verbally on air on camera that you heard her telling your boss about. Like, that is not okay. You shouldn't be trying to settle your disputes physically, number one. Mm-hmm. That's not okay. You shouldn't be yelling and screaming on set in front of everyone like that. You shouldn't be making threats. So that's what we mean when we say that, like, he absolutely had problems that were narcissistic, that were violent. He was having these outbursts.
There were even camera operators who would try to get out of working with Vester because mm-hmm. one of the cameramen described his behavior as diva-like, which that is diva-like. And for antisocial behavior, he was let go from his job in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
That's when he filed that civil lawsuit against his former employer. Mm-hmm. But instead of reiterating his complaint being that he was discriminated against, like zoom in on the gay man, he said that the firing was actually racially based. So he's changing his story. It's like he doesn't even know what he's mad at. And mm-hmm. He's saying that he got fired because he was African-American.
Right. Changed completely the track. And I think he knew, what happened is that was a choice he made because he didn't feel that he had enough evidence or that he wasn't going to be able to prove in court
mm-hmm.
that he was bullied on any kind of sexual orientation.
If you don't have evidence of someone saying something, it's like hearsay.
I mean, even if you did, like, I don't think that there was actually enough of it going on or that he could have proved that his bosses did nothing about it. His bosses did do something about it. So, like, how are you going to sue the company? Like, they tried to step in for you. And when they fired you, it wasn't actually because of anything other than you were unable to work with anyone. Your coworkers were afraid of your, you know, outbursts. Mm-hmm. Your behavior was all over the place. They were scared of you. So now he's saying racial discrimination. That was in 2000. He went to the local newspaper and said that his supervisors had called him a monkey.
Yeah, what was up with that?
And so now he's just making, so I mean, I'm going to say he's making them up because nobody else came out and said that they'd ever heard these things. So like these things that he had said, oh, I'm getting bullied for being gay. Now once he's fired, he's making up these other completely different stories. He's saying his producer told him to stop speaking in Ebonics. Mm-hmm. So in 2021, apparently, this was settled. And we should point out that the producer, Michael Walker, of the TV station at this time was Black.
So why would he, I mean.
And Michael Walker's wife, who also worked at the TV station and worked over Vester. Stupid name, Flanagan. she's also Black. So it's a very minority heavy employment at that station. And you're claiming that they're racially discriminating against you and calling you these names. And not that that never happens, but you're making up these completely different stories that you never said when you were working there.
I have a question. So, and this might get into like really sticky area, but there are some things that like you and I can say to each other because we're both women. I can call you a bitch and you're like,
yep,
cool. But if a man were to call me a bitch, I'd be like, excuse me. So, but are there things that like, because Michael Walker, investor, they're both African-American, did he was like, hey, stop speaking, you know, like how you would speak at home. You got to do whatever, X, Y, and Z.
I mean, it's something? Hard to say because we don't know what it said in the court filings. But yeah, from everything I read, especially the things about like, oh, he called me a monkey. And like, yeah, it sounds like Michael Walker came out and was like, none of that ever happened. Like, that yeah is just, I don't know what he's talking about. But like, he kicked up such a fuss and the TV station was closing and they didn't have the money to keep the battle going that they were like, we're shutting this down. Because mm-hmm what they actually said and what's actually in the paperwork is that Flanagan was fired because of, quote, poor performance, an unwillingness to take direction, and financial pressures that prompted staff cutbacks. And it should be noted that the TV station closed down the same year it fired Flanagan. Mm-hmm. And the two sides reached a settlement. The lawsuit was dismissed and neither side released any comments.
So we don't really know, but we can kind of infer.
I mean, if they're saying, well, we had to cut back and they shut down the same year because they're bankrupt, like, whose side looks like they're lying? You know what I mean? It looks, for the most part, like you're making up these wild accusations. Mm-hmm. Everybody says that you are a horror to work with.
Yeah.
You are definitely having violent outbursts and threatening people. They know this. It's on camera. Mm-hmm. So, like, most of the shit's lining up with the other side.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And now we see Flanagan start to move from job to job, never in the same job more than 2 years, which, and I'm not, this is a generalization. I think that when somebody is not in a good place in their mental health, mm-hmm, you will see someone move from place to workplace. And I don't mean that that it's your fault or that you're violent necessarily. It could just be that you have depression that's like not well treated or you have anxiety. Because I've been there where I have floated from job to job because I was not in a good mental place. It's just, I feel like when you're not in a good, healthy mental space, you're going to have a hard time finding where you fit. And so I feel like that was a really good indicator that he was not doing well. And you will see he's spiraled out.
It's starting to go downhill.
It was going and going.
Yeah, there definitely is something to be said about that because it's not like your job is a promoter. And when your promotion job is over, you go to the next thing. That's totally different. This is like, you know.
And another thing, too, because I think it's one thing if you go from job to job, you're in the same, like I'm a nurse. If one hospital fires me and I go to another hospital, but I'm still as a nurse, right? Or I'm a waitress and I go from restaurant to restaurant because it's just that environment, right? It's a high turnover, mm-hmm, okay? But what he was doing is he was going into different kinds of jobs. Like he didn't know who he was. I think that is a bigger indicator. Like, so I'm going to throw him under the bus right now because fuck him, my ex-stepdad. He would go from like doing real estate to stocking supermarket shelves, driving a truck, to selling, junk off the street. So it's like
it's all over the place.
Yes, I feel like really narcissistic people will always find, well, it wasn't good enough for me. I'm just not, that my talents don't shine there. I should do something else with my life. And it's always this idea of they're just lost. Their mental health is shit. So it's not even about you can't hold a job because maybe the job market sucks. Maybe your employer sucks. So maybe your resume does look like you're all over the place. But if you know who you are, you're always going to be a nurse, an accountant, whatever, right? You're still in the same general field. Maybe you always work in computers, but different like roles. But if you are one day a plumber and the next day you're driving a semi-truck, there's a disconnect.
There is a disconnect.
He was at one point working in like on gas lines. Then he bounced into modeling. Sense. He himself said he became an escort.
I did not know that.
Yes. Part. Oh, I'm surprised. So he said for several years he flew to Australia and was an escort making thousands of dollars as an escort.
Then be an escort.
But he didn't.
Okay.
He came back. So he's bouncing around from one job field to another. I think this is a red flag. Flanagan is spiraling. I don't think in hindsight this is a surprise. So let's go to 2014. Flanagan sues another TV station he works for. This time, he's claiming wrongful termination, retaliation, racial and sexual harassment. How did he get harassed? He claims his coworkers would bully him with things like, quote, placing a watermelon where he would notice it as he's entering and exiting the building.
You know who else likes watermelon? Everyone else.
Me. Me. Right? You know what's great? When you poke a hole in the watermelon, pour vodka in it.
Yes.
Leave it in there. Delicious. Just kiss. So, several people at that company later said they had had a picnic, like a company picnic.
Oh my God.
And the watermelon was left outside because somebody was going to pick it up and take it home at the end of the day.
Jesus, Flanagan.
It seems like he became just set on this idea that everyone's out to offend me. I'm going to be offended at everything. Everyone's meant for me.
He's always the victim.
And I'm going to perceive everything as an insult, whether it's for me or not. Since everything happened, no one, not his family, not any, if he had any friends, have ever stepped forward to defend him, to say, no, he was really a nice guy. No, you don't understand. No one's ever come out to say anything nice about him, which also I think is...
Red flag.
Red flags all over. So I think everyone knew he needed anger management and he had serious mental health issues.
So this is what I think was... It stood out to me because when Flanagan was hired at WDBJ Roanoke, he was working closely with Parker and Ward. And the station's manager decided Vester's impressive resume made him the perfect fit for the station and was totally unaware of past controversies, which is like, how? If this follows him from job, the previous station closed down. The like last civil suit was basically settled or thrown out.
Right?
So if nothing would
he
have
goes by
up.
Two names. I feel like he's sneaky that way. You know, his resume is like 10 jobs deep. The last five of the jobs were like, yeah, I was working on gas lines and I slept around in Australia. So like, how far deep are you going to call?
Exactly. No,
nobody calls the
reference. No one ever calls references. So, but quickly, employees at WDBJ noticed Vester was obviously argumentative, confrontational, and within the first 3 months of working there, he was a part of three separate employee complaints saying they all felt threatened and uncomfortable working with Vester. Which, 3 months. I've never had an HR complaint. I mean, if you work with people and you're as close as everyone was, it's like impossible to get fired from those places.
Right? It seems like it's like they felt bad too.
Yeah.
It's not like the kind of people, they weren't Karens, right? That they went immediately and were like, you know what? He ate a tuna fish sandwich at lunch. I don't like it. He needs to stop. No, like they genuinely felt afraid to work with him. That he was going to just, I mean, look, he's threatening to beat a meteorologist up.
Over
a comment. A comment about your job, about what you actually are working on.
And he was actually in the wrong.
Not because she got off stage and was like, I don't want to work with him because his shirt's too shiny or some shit. Like,
yeah.
I don't like his cologne. No. He's saying, look, hey, he's messing up the script. Tell him something.
And that's a big deal because you're on camera in front of thousands of people. Your words matter.
And I'm going to say something and you can come at me for it. All right. Because I did the acting thing. The entertainment industry is ruthless. Yeah. Sometimes your coworkers aren't going to like you and they're going to be petty or backstab you because everyone wants to be the shining star.
Yep.
So maybe she was being a little bit like, oh, I want to be the star. I'm going to go tell my boss how I'm the good actor and how he fucked up because I want to look like the good one. Whatever, man. This is the industry. If you don't like it, get the fuck out of the kitchen.
Coming back to it.
Right? Like, don't. But you know Like, if you messed up a line, all you have to say is, all right, cool, I'll get it right next time. Like, why are you threatening to literally take her outside and punch her in the face?
Could you imagine every time we mispronounce a name or a town, people come at
us? Holy hell. Listen, you can come at us all we want. We're going to delete those emails, though. We're going to laugh at you. You can troll our TikToks and shit. We're going to laugh at you, though.
But weeks later, February 2013, Vester was fired from the station due to his obvious volatile behavior. When coworkers found out that he was let go, they stated Vester started lashing out so violently that the cops had to be called. The station had CCTV cameras, which, of course, it's a news station. They're gonna, I mean, everything you do is seen. But they picked up an instance when Vester... He picked up like a wooden cross from a coworker's desk and threw it at the station manager and screamed, "You need this." Bold, bold move. Former coworkers were so afraid of him that there would be like a possible retaliation at the station that they actually paid for private security and everyone was informed to call the police if Vester even steps foot back at those studios. Which, good, they're, like, being proactive because this guy's off his rocker.
I mean, that's a really serious thing. If you're going that far that you think you need security from another employee. Mm-hmm. Like, look, I've been in companies where people got fired and when they left, everybody gave each other side eye because that person was real salty. Mm-hmm. We never felt that we needed security to keep them out.
Oh, do you want to know something so funny? So last night at dinner... we were waiting for everyone to show up and you know how the hostess and like, I don't know, bartender or coworkers, they always mingle. We've both worked in restaurants. There's so much gossip. You don't care who's going
so
around.
So much tea.
People were on their phones, but I was listening to the tea and apparently someone who was working there, like goes in after their shift and hangs out at the bar and just drinks and drinks and drinks. And something had happened and they are now banned from that location, which it takes a lot to get banned from a restaurant, especially like a local chain.
Definitely. It takes so
and
much.
Freaking like
they forgive everything. Look, they want your money. Exactly. It's not like a fancy restaurant. It's, you know, run of the mill, right?
Yeah, it's,
it takes a lot. They'll put up so much. Lot.
But, and so I was just listening to this because I was like, oh, I was that hostess. I was that server who like totally gossiped all the time, but someone got banned. Could you imagine if they like came in while we were there? Because that had just happened. And I'm like, are they going to come in here and like go postal?
I mean, you would hope not.
Exactly.
Not while I'm there. Can you wait, please?
Can you wait till
I
after
finish
I get my
dinner?
Stuffed peppers and whatever.
Please, please. Were they good though? Kind of thinking about stuff.
So we got, I'm going to mention, we can edit it out. We asked, hey, do you guys want to do a family dinner? Because my one friend bailed. And they're like, great. And so we were thinking, like, we're in New Jersey. Pick any place in the world. We have access to it. And Dylan was like, Olive Garden. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me?
Why?
Well, that's always the go-to. Is like Olive Garden, and I get it. Like, you know what you're gonna get. It's gonna be good. It's just
it's food. Consistent.
It is,
and
consistent.
I think there's something to say about consistency.
Mm-hmm.
We love consistency,
yeah,
especially Americans. I mean, but humans as a whole, we appreciate what we know.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things we talked about, Ron and I, when we were in Vegas, was how. Out of all the amazing restaurants, because there's so many amazing restaurants there.
Oh, yeah.
The ones you see most packed are like the Grand Lux,
yeah.
Right? Like the most.
Cheesecake Factory.
Yes. And it's like, I mean, I have those right here. And it's,
yeah.
But there's so many people who are traveling to Las Vegas from the middle of fucking nowhere, Oklahoma, where they don't have Cheesecake Factory.
They just want a burger.
Or. More often, because let's be honest, most people live in that. We're not in that rural of a place.
Mm-hmm.
Most people, when they travel,
yeah,
they don't want to try something new.
That's
they
cool.
want what they know.
Yeah.
Because it's consistent. They don't have to worry that it's going to look different.
Yeah.
They know the menu. It's not a new weird food. The price is generally going to be the same. It's just we appreciate what we know. Creatures of comfort.
It was definitely comfort.
And I mean, unlimited breadsticks, right? Is it still, right? Unlimited salad?
It's still unlimited salad.
I love it.
And so I filled up on salad because I've gotten those all the same lettuce, toppings, olives, salad dressing. They sell. You can buy it. It doesn't taste the same at home.
It doesn't. It hits different.
But there is something to be said about like an ice cold salad on a cold plate. It was delicious. I just think
I like it. I haven't been to an Olive Garden in a hot minute.
Yeah, it's been a while, but I was just dying because I was like, all right, I know who suggested this restaurant. And like I said, we're in freaking South Jersey. You can go anywhere. But whatever, it was good, it was delicious, and I got to listen to all the gossip that was between the waitresses, because it was late.
You really have to do a lot to get banned from an Olive Garden. That's all I gotta say about that. Have to top-tier misbehavior.
So I'm dying to know what this person did to get banned from fucking Olive Garden.
Throw hands. Yeah. Literally had to break something or someone, because...
And why are you over-serving someone at Olive Garden? Like, how many peach bellinis does it take?
Maybe it didn't take that much.
Maybe they came in wasted. Who knows?
Pre-gaming. These young kids, they pre-game so easy. It's like they don't even think about it.
Oh, my God. So, well... Back to Fester. I'm sorry for that tangent, but
I'm not sorry.
It needed to be shared.
It really did, though.
Fester, just like in Florida, Fester filed another complaint, but this time he did it with the Employment Equal Opportunity Commission, which is like, all right, you crossed a line.
Right.
He named Allison Parker as one of the main accusers in an ongoing case of racial discrimination. After a very intensive investigation from the EEOC, it was found that the complaints were completely invalid. None of Vester's statements had evidence or could be corroborated. Following this instance, Fester writes a note that he is going to take his own life. He claims that he is so filled with rage after this incident that he goes home and kills both of his cats. From now until the shooting, Fester is completely unable to let go of any feelings of vengeance, and he continued to claim the discrimination on Facebook and Twitter, and I'm assuming other social media accounts.
Those seem to be his two big ones, was Twitter and Facebook, or his main venting grounds.
So on social media, because everything is recorded, once it's out there, it's out there. He posted some rants. I don't even know what to call it. He went off.
He did. That is the only thing to say. He went on a tear.
He did. He claims that...
He's big mad.
Yeah.
That is what you could say.
He put on Facebook that Parker was making coded racial comments during the employment. But again, everything was proven to be false, and there's no evidence that Parker actually said that. But once it's out there, I mean, if Allison Parker was still working, that would be terrible in the entertainment
business. She'd have to fight it everywhere. She'd have to clarify that everywhere she goes, that, you know what, that was proven false. But you have to bring it up, because it would always be in somebody's mind. It would always be on a Google search.
It's always going to be associated with her.
Yep. You can't suck that back out.
So do you want to get into about the videos on the TV and internet with YouTube?
Let's get into it. In 2020, Allison Parker's dad, Andy Parker, filed a complaint against YouTube with the Federal Trade Commission, stating that the website failed to take down the video showing his daughter's murder. The next year, he filed another complaint against Facebook. Andy Parker stated, "Posting violent content and murder is not free speech. It's savagery. Allison's murder, shared on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, is just one of the egregious practices that are undermining the fabric of our society." Many users of Facebook and Twitter complained at the time about the autoplay, which was enabled automatically, and showed them the video of the shooting without warning. Back in 2015, they had not yet enabled the opt-in option for users, so videos played automatically. And this caused outrage in the community because of the violent broadcasts. Twitter did remove Flanagan's profile within 8 minutes of the upload, but because users can repost, the video went viral before anyone could stop it.
Hey everyone, I wanted to jump on here real quick and let everyone know how they can get a hold of us. Of course, we are on all social media channels. We're on TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. If you want to send us a message, tilldeathdouspartpodcast@gmail.com. And we're much more active on Instagram, tilldeathdouspartpodcast. If you have sent us a message and we haven't either responded or heard back from us, do not feel bad. It is not your fault. It's Natalia's fault. And with that being said, definitely like, follow, subscribe, review, share, all those fun things. See you later.